Me too. We'll all just have a backup. All
right, and we're doing this podcast Geiger style, right?
What is
it? Yeah.
I don't know. About
that means pants are off, fellas.
Well, I have a beer in front of me. Does that count?
What is Geiger style? We just say or gorsh and then laugh a lot.
Well, I'm just picturing it. I'm just picturing it. Geiger style is doing it pantsless with wild turkey in your hand.
By that he means a liquor.
good time. All right. When do we want to start this?
By the way, when I did that, I gave the invisible camera the camera look.
Did you really?
Did you do the wink?
Yeah. Now we can continue with match game.
Chris, was it oh my God, we're gonna go on for 20 minutes with that. Chris, was it the beginning of the
Gene Rayburn?
That was Gene Rayburn, yeah.
Yeah.
Did they make that microphone special for Gene Rayburn? I've never seen a microphone like that before or since.
You know what's a special microphone is the one for oh God, I forgot the name of the show and the host. What a lame-o. Price is Right, with like the 19-foot long by...
Oh, yeah, the cigarette holder microphone.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He holds it like down at crotch level and it like tickles his nose.
I'm sick, guys. I don't want to be here tonight, and I'm going to be mad and pissy. And so I don't care. I don't care who makes web comics. Screw everybody. I hope you all fail. So that's how. That's. I mean, I'm sure I'll be better next show, but for this show, I just hope everybody fails, including me, web comics, because I don't feel good.
Because I'm ready to quit.
So let's start this. Let's start the show. I mean, why bother? But let's start.
Well, just in contrast, I could not love the world more tonight. So I'm going to be your polar opposite. How's that?
I don't know who that is, but whatever.
Brad, you'd like the middle ground.
Brad's the Switzerland of emotion.
Yeah, awesome web comics. It's great. Let's all throw our lives away. First question.
You're tearing me apart. Okay, first question. I guess we're going to skip the introductions. We'll go right in.
Oh, listen to the last episode if it's that important to you.
Jeez, you are sick.
Wow.
I know. Listen to Captain. You know what, bro, Brad? I'm not going to let Captain Negative bring us down. You're listening to Web Comics Weekly. From live from the Half Pixel crew, recorded previously on some weird night that's the only time we can get together. It's Sunday night, 9 p.m. Pacific time. God, it's 12 a.m. Brad time. And you're listening to Chris, Scott, and Dave. This week's episode brought to you by Indicia, as Indicia.com/comics. Special deal from Indicia, and we'll be talking about that more at the beginning, middle, and the end of the show. And all right, let's dive into it. First question.
Is Brad not coming?
Yeah, I noticed that. You're listening to Chris, Scott, and Dave. I get left out every time.
Yeah. What is that about, Dave?
Every time there's a list, I get left out.
Did I not say Brad?
No, you
did. We started this thing off saying we were doing it Geiger style. You're getting enough.
Yeah.
Take it easy. Take it easy there.
I think doing a Geiger style is forgetful and not wearing pants.
I can't. I hope we can talk about Indicia again soon, because when you did mention Indicia, I felt better.
Oh, well,
it was a little comfort.
Do you want to talk about Indicia briefly?
Not right now.
God. We need to bring it in.
I'm
more
eager to tell you. I'm in. I'm with you guys. I've got mine. I've got the Dymo Laser Writer 400. I've got my little scale. I've got the software.
Yeah.
I shipped my first packages with Indicia. I went Thursday. I went to the post office and broke up with my postal employee. We had like an actual breaking up because I've had him so many times. Not in a biblical sense. I've had my so many.
Wow.
That, yeah, could you imagine how long that would take? I had so many admirers that I really felt like I was breaking up with him. He looks across the counter and he says, oh, so you got that software now. And he kind of looked at me and I said, you know, it was kind of like one of those, it's not you, it's me kind of moments. You know, it's like, and I'm happy and I'm in a happier place. And being the OCD maniac that I am, I really had to hear it from him. It was okay if I left my packages there without standing in line. And I know for a fact I'm still going to have a hard time doing it the first time I have to do it. But he said, you guys are right. You can just go in there, drop them off, and leave. And he says, you don't have to wait in line. The stickers are on them. You just go.
Yeah.
So, and Brad, not only that, the post office encourages you as you're walking and looks at people in line and just go, booyah! They love that when you...
In your face.
Yeah, well, I live in Philadelphia. I'm not going to antagonize anyone if I absolutely can avoid it. But it was great. And you guys didn't tell me this. You can upload your comic logo to your return address. So
yeah.
it looks all professional and all. I mean, my packages, that's the thing I really never glommed onto, and that was the fact that I was writing all these packages out by hand. The stuff I sent out last week, it just looks professional as all get out, and even has my logo on it. I mean, I'm so happy that you guys talked me into this, and that's what I've been waiting to say.
Good.
Cricket.
Brad, tell us later when we're not in the middle of an actual paid ad if you really like it, though.
Okay, we'll wait. I'll tell you what. We'll wait next week. I'll tell you what I really think.
No, seriously, though.
And it's going to be very similar to what I just said.
How awesome is it, though? It's great, right?
It really is worth every penny, and that special deal. It's incredible.
Well, savor it, because I don't know the next time we'll be able to line up a sponsor like this. It's actually something that we use and enjoy and actually don't have to fake, like, you know,
that we
enjoying.
Love it. Yeah.
Or that it's, you know.
I was going to say,
you,
Brad,
I tell you,
you
what,
got...
guys. Oh, no, I was going to say, ahead, go ahead, Chris. I go off. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say that Brad got the... got kind of maybe the toughest deal. I don't know about you guys' stories, but I didn't have any problem not going to the post office again. I can't stand those guys.
Well, I can't stand waiting in line, but the people behind the counter are nice enough people. Hey, do you think that I could put my packages in one of those blue drop boxes that are on every street corner?
No, you cannot.
I can't do that.
No.
It's because it has to be under 13 ounces if you want to drop it in there.
Oh, okay.
Even then, Brad, they kind of discourage that just because after the anthrax stuff after 9/11, they changed a lot of the rules about where you can drop packages. So what I find ridiculous about that from a postal standpoint is that let's say I left, and this is getting too conspiratorial, but let's say I and tracks Lay's package just sitting on the puff of shelf, how would they then track me down? By camera? Is that how they would do it?
No, but the thing is, Dave, they have things at the post office where they scan all that stuff for things.
But if you might have a camera. You're right, Dave. They might have cameras so that if they did find it after they scanned it, they could track you down.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
Why are you so worried about that, Dave? Why are you so interested in that?
Yeah.
What
are you guys?
Keep an eye out for the packages I'm sending, guys.
Yeah, guess what? I've never worried about being caught for mailing anthrax somewhere.
You know, that's funny. I got this email today. I got this email said you got anthrax from Sheldon. Neat. And I thought, what a strange email to get.
I got this weird email from from this guy going, so I guess I can mail you anthrax now. Let's get this going. Let's get this done.
Let's
set this up. Finally.
There's got to be a better way.
Just an email that says, you've been anthraxed.
You got the thrax.
You got the thrax. Pass it on.
Literally. All right.
So it's anyway, for Jed. Shall we move into our first question today, fellas?
Let's dive in.
I'm more than ready.
I'll take that burbling excitement as a yes. Here it is. It says, hello, I'm curious about the legality of parody in comics. I know parody is the driving force behind a lot of game and movie-themed comics, but has anyone ever run into legal issues about using ideas or characters from other sources? How should cartoonists go about making a parody of a book, game, movie, etc.? Should it stop at just one strip, or is it okay to parody an entire story through multiple strips? What are your thoughts on the ethics involved? Thanks for your time, Jim Tierney. And he has graphiteplayground.com.
Best to hire a lawyer, buddy. Best of luck. Next question.
That's actually a good question, and I wish I could tell you that I had it like all spelled out and I had the answer right here in front of me, because I don't. I have the exact opposite of that. It's one of those things where I've asked other people that do similar things, and they all kind of say basically they all kind of have the same answer, which is like, well, I guess until you don't get away with it anymore, it's okay. Wink, wink.
Which is kind of the answer, but the question, I think that what we can discuss is how much is too much, because you can have a satirical jab at a movie or whatever, and you can mention the film, and you can even have the main character from the movie show up like Mad Magazine style. Hey guys, I'm this, and my movie sucks. Blank, you know, that kind of thing. I don't think you can get in trouble for that. But the place where it starts to become troublesome, it's like, hi, I'm Tony Stark, I'm Iron Man, and now I'm a regular cast member of No Shoes for Tuesday.
Yeah, obviously fair use. If you understand fair use or look it up, you can see how it's defined. Of course, when it comes to this fair use stuff, it's all what's provable. You know, I mean, if you God, what is the court case that I just read about where someone got in trouble and they said it was fair use, but they J.K. Rowling just got an injunction filed against a person that was writing a Harry Potter companion book. It was basically a book that was a companion to help you understand everything in the Harry Potter world. And that does fall under fair use. I mean, I've seen companion books like that about all kinds of things. And as long as it's in review. But again, it went in front of a judge. They made their case. The judge liked what they had to say, and the book can't be printed now. So it's really
worth mentioning too that a big part of that is that that person that went up against the richest woman in England, and you can bottle it there for that.
Yeah, and also consider the case. You remember Penny Arcade's Strawberry Shortcake strip?
Correct.
Where they did a like Strawberry Shortcake via American McGee. It was kind of S&M, whatever. According to parody law, I think they were well within their rights.
Yeah.
To put that strip up. But the second American Greeting said, hey, we own Strawberry Shortcake and you are in trouble, they said, all right, it wasn't worth fighting. We're not going to go to court.
We'll exactly.
So.
Exactly. But there's a, there is one example in. Oh, wow. Someone's breaking up bad.
That's probably me. Go ahead.
I didn't even realize I was interrupting you until halfway through it.
That's okay. Go ahead.
We've especially in video game comic strips, we've done this a lot, where you mention a video game and you kind of parody it, and you have maybe Solid Snake in your strip. But again, you're parodying the character. It's a parody. You're mocking it. You're making a commentary on it. But then all of a sudden, you have a thing where it kind of crosses the realm, and it becomes like a regular character. And I think that's when you're risking things. So there's definitely a line you can cross. And it all depends on whether you get noticed, whether or not the company cares. And then in the end, it all comes down to whether or not you want to spend the money to fight it if someone wants to challenge your fair use.
Yeah, I think, though, that that's not avoiding crossing that line is a lot of the reason why, like, Mad Magazine would be like, hi, I'm Blatman, and I fight crime. And they just change it a little bit. So it's obviously a joke.
Right.
Whereas I think they might be within their rights to make a joke using the actual name of Batman, but it's better to be safe.
Right, exactly.
I always find it funny when we start discussing the legalities of it, because I know that there's some lawyer out there going, "Oh God, stop talking! Just stop talking!"
Well, no, I've asked a lawyer about it, and I've asked a couple lawyers about it, and their answer is always, "Well, look, it's fair use. It's all a matter of whether or not you're going to make a case against fair use in court, and your case versus their case, and then it's all up for judgment. It's all very." Up in the air.
Here's what I know about it, and you guys feel free to jump in and correct me, and I think it kind of builds up what Scott was just saying, is that there's two things. When you are parroting an idea, a person, or a company, or a brand, that's one thing in the United States. But where it gets tricky is when you use another person, idea, company, or brand to parody something else, and the first idea, person, company, or brand comes at you, then you stand on shakier ground. So if I use Skull the Troll to parody Disney's hiring practices with Mickey Mouse, Scott actually has, if I understand it better, Scott actually has a better chance of saying that's not fair use of Skull, because what you're actually parodying is Mickey and you're using my character to do it.
Correct.
So that's where you get on shaky ground. And I also, if I have this right, a corporation and a brand is not considered, it's legally considered an entity, but it does not have individual American rights in the same way you or I do, such that you can't parody a corporation or brand or an item the same way that you can get away with parodying a public figure, a politician, or an actress, or a personality. So what that means is that in a weird sort of way, if I understand it right, a brand or a trademark or an object has more rights than a person to avoid parody, because they're not a living, breathing thing. They're a created item. So a company can actually have more protective rights for their brand or their trademark than, say, you know, John McCain would as a public figure, or, you know, I don't know, one of the cast members of Friends would.
And then you add, there's a whole other layer to this as well, David, because even if you're well within fair use, if the party that you've parodied can prove that your parody has caused them damage... material damages. Yeah. Then it doesn't matter. You can be a good example of that is Todd McFarlane in his comic strip Spawn, named one of his he's also a big hockey fan, and he named one of his villains, this mafia boss, named him Tony Twist, Anthony Twistielli or whatever, after a hockey player that he doesn't like, that's on an opposing team to his favorite team. I don't know the details, but he named one of his characters after a hockey player, and even though it could be considered parody or fair use, the hockey player proved that it could have damaged his brand, because the character in the comic was vile. He was a horrible, horrible criminal, did very vile things. And he won. It would have bankrupted McFarlane. Then he was filing appeal, saying to the judge, "Look, I mean, if you judge for this, it will destroy me. It will ruin me." You know. So I mean, there's all kinds of subtle levels to this.
Right, well, and
go ahead.
No, Brad, you go ahead. I've been talking too much. You go ahead.
There's one more that kind of comes into that too, and that is the idea of trading on someone else's brand. In other words, in my mind, and I do use some cameos in Evil Inc. quite a bit, but I always try to kind of make them either a one-shot or a background situation, because I don't want to get into a situation in which I'm trading on Marvel or DC's brand. In other words, if I have so many of these cameos that it could be proved that a Dr. Octopus fan would buy my book because of the amount of Dr. Octopus in it, for example, then I'm going to be easily proven to be trading on their brand. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
So if I had a whole bunch of more likely Superman or Batman kind of parody stuff in my work, and I put a book of this stuff together, especially, geez, if I put them right out on the cover, you know, now I'm really trading on that brand, because I'm putting it right there, basically saying, "Hey, Batman fans, hey, Super or whoever I'm parodying, you know, if you're a fan of this thing, this book might be it might be proved that the person was more likely to buy your book than if they didn't see that there." Yeah. So there's a whole trading on one's brand issue that you got to be very careful with.
And then I think
can I ask a question? Who is Dr. Octopus?
What?
Jeez.
Now, come on. I said it right. Dr. Octopus.
I certainly know who Dr. Octopus is, but who is Dr. Octopus?
You know what? You're a mean guy when you're sick.
I'm not happy, Brad Geiger.
He's not a friendly man. When Scott is up, he's up, and when he's down, oh man.
No.
Catch it.
Oh, brother.
So, and then the one final thing before we finish that topic off, though, the one final thing that I would say too is that, and I think even any lawyer would tell you this, is that it all depends too on, and I wasn't joking when I said that J.K. Rowling can afford to hire the best. She's richer than the Queen, and that makes a huge difference. If you have a 10-person legal team against you and your community lawyer that you hired, you're going to lose. And it also depends too on, and this is why so many lawyers settle before it actually goes to court, because when you go to court, there is an intrinsic danger in going to court. You never know how a judge is going to side. You never know how a venue is going to come down. You never know how a jury is going to side. And it's you even with the strongest possible case in the world, you can still lose, as we all know. So so even in above the legalities of it, there's a danger. If your work gets to the point where it's raised to a lawsuit, you're in trouble. So that's probably why Penny Arcade said, look, it's just not worth it for us. They can hire two on-staff lawyers to work on this for the next 6 months, and in the meantime, it'll cost us $500,000 to $1 million to defend it, you know? And so it's just not worth it. So
also, she's magic, Cole. So she's got that in her corner, too. You don't want to mess with that. No, J.K. Rowling. Strawberry Shortcake as well.
Why? I find it very interesting that you never see Strawberry Shortcake and J.K. Rowling in the same room at the same time.
What? Hold on.
Interesting. Blind item.
Quidditch.
Very interesting, though, that you do see the Purple Pie Man and Voldemort in the same room at the same time.
Oh no.
Yeah. Very, very telling. Very telling.
He whose name will not be spoken. Purple Pie Man? Yeah, that's who I mean. Sorry. Yeah, I guess we are speaking it. All right.
I guess we're saying the same now. Good job.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Is Purple Pie Man really a villain in Strawberry Shortcake?
Yes.
How do you know that, Dave Kellett?
You know what? You work in toys for 9 years, Scott.
Okay, very good. Well done. Well played.
Good cover. Well, you know now, why did I know it?
Hey, speaking of. this is actually a very telling case, though. I don't know if you guys have been following the Mattel intellectual property suit against Bratz Toys this last 6 months or year, but it just got settled this last week or two. And talk about spending to defend intellectual property. It's reported that Mattel spent $60 million in this lawsuit. So that's why you do not want to go to court, and you do not want to have to hire a team of lawyers, and you want to avoid that stuff at all costs, because nothing can rise faster than a legal bill.
Wait a minute. Strawberry Shortcake was suing Bratz?
No, Brad, no. Mattel was suing MGA over the creative property that is Bratz, which was originally created at Mattel, and the guy went and took it to Bratz.
Oh, wow. I always thought that was Bratz. Oh, okay.
No, Bratz is the short Chicago-based toy line that is it's just a series
and they
of
don't
fat.
Smell like- They don't smell like strawberries, I'll tell you that.
There is one called the Purple Pie Man, though, but it's a very different kind of thing.
Poor guy.
It's like a meat pie.
It's more like a meat pie, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So did we?
Here's another question.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's put that one to bed. We'll move on before we go any further down the Purple Pie Man path. To us by Tom Delaringa, who does Marooned at marooncomic.com. And he says, I desire to bring one of my comic characters to plushy life. A few years ago, my wife had a business party where we explored making a princess doll. We had a company in China do the prototype that cost us $400 to actually make the doll. Would have cost something like $6 per piece. But there was some difficulty with customs and shipping, and ultimately that squashed the deal. Since you guys have some success with plushies, if you could speak about it. So that's pretty much what he's asking.
So my experience with plushies is that these toys, any toys, really, are pretty expensive to make, especially if they're custom. And most places that you can find usually go through somebody in China. So even if you do find someone, let's say, here in the States to make a plush for you, they are being a liaison, and they have either hired, represent, or have contacted a company in China that actually puts the plushes together. This was something I got a lot of negative feedback from when I first made the skull plushes, and they said made in China on them, I guess. A lot of my readers are upset that I was making things in China. Believe me, I did my best to make plushes in the States. Not sure how that's possible. Everyone I've contacted, and I went through a company called the Beverly Hills Teddy Bear Company. They all end up using someone in China.
Scott, can I tell you, having worked for the largest toy company in the world, do you know how many plants Mattel has in the United States anymore?
How many?
Zero. Seriously, nobody manufactures toys in the U.S. The cost per unit is too high.
You
can find somebody somewhere, but there's literally no one that does it anymore.
You just can't.
There are a few small like custom wood toy making companies that still work in the U.S. But if you want plastics, you're going to China, Vietnam.
Sure. I mean, if you want to hire a housewife to make them for you for fun or on the side, I mean, that's we even considered that at one point, but. But really, if you want to find a American front just to feel better about it, please do. But you're going through China. If you can get the contacts and do the research and find a Chinese company yourself, you can cut out the middleman. Because usually what happens, like with Beverly Hills Teddy Bear Company, or who are the other people who went through? Curto for yours, Chris?
Yeah.
So they're paying the Chinese manufacturer whatever they charge, they're paying that. But then they're charging you a premium on top of that to be the middleman. So if you can skip that middleman and just go straight to a Chinese manufacturer yourself, then you can cut some of the price down on that. But usually it's good to – I don't know. It just seems to me these are waters that you kind of have to navigate through trial and error and meeting people and knowing people and talking and stuff. And getting in good with somebody, because you really are dealing with Chinese manufacturers. However, it's not that it shouldn't be. I don't think it's necessarily that difficult if you do a little research. I was just put in touch with a Chinese toy manufacturer that makes resin figures, because we're going to be making some statuettes, which aren't plushes, I understand, but it's the same category. And I work directly with them, and. And it's great. I mean, it's very easy, and actually it's a lot easier than working with some of the American liaisons I found. A couple things you should understand when you're dealing with any manufacturer in China. They have a gazillion holidays. Like, you'll be talking to your contact at the toy manufacturer, and you'll be talking to them every day through emails. Of course, you're seeing your emails. It's almost like Lady Hawk, right? Because they're in a different time zone. So you can only email – when they email you, you're a hawk, and when you email them, they're a wolf or something like that.
Lady Hawk, what a great reference.
So you wake up in the morning, and you see the email from them like, oh, Navarre, I got your message, and yes, we can fix that on the prototype. It will send that to you. And then at night, you're like, oh, Isabeau, thank you, and I will place the order. But all of a sudden, just for a week, radio silence, nothing. Just nothing. No, and that's because there's a Chinese holiday going on, and they're just like, well, whatever. Celebration of the dragon dog pig. Fireworks. No emails. That's probably racist. But anyway, that actually is not racist. That's an actual holiday. That's not me being pissy because of the cold. Fire dog pig. Fireworks is really a Chinese holiday. It's halted schedule on the scratch regent figure. Can't tell you how many times. But anyway,
it's a floating holiday.
Nothing. Dave is completely. Dave is completely
flattened. Just gritting teeth.
Anyway. I can't make any kind of a joke. We are different, Dave. There's different people around the world.
Well, the problem, Dave is a devout Buddhist, so I think that's really...
Everything I say would be funny no matter what nationality I pick. Like if I was like, oh, but German manufacturers are great, unless you're in October, Dave would be like, aunt is German, aunt's German, German aunt. Offended still.
Don't go there, still offended, still offended.
Dead silence.
And then I'm like, damn it, David, is there one nationality that I cannot offend? And you're like, look, my family met at an it's a small world convention. They made love on the ride.
My family makes up 2/3 of the UN. Good luck.
Do you know I know somebody who got stuck on the It's a Small World ride for about 2 hours?
Here it comes. Here's the joke. What is it, Brad?
No, I swear to God, this is the truth. There's no setup here. He got stuck, and it's a boat ride, and they piped in over the loudspeakers, "Don't get out of your boat because there's electrical stuff down there. You'll get electrocuted. Don't try to wade to shore. Just wait there until we come and get you." And the whole time, the little dolls are dancing, the music is playing over and over again. He had to sit in there for like 2 hours before they were able to get him out. Like by the time he got out, it was almost like to the point of being psychological torture, he said.
And it just, they wouldn't turn off the ride?
Well, they didn't want to ruin it for the kids who were enjoying it. They got families in those boats.
Brad, I once got stuck on the haunted house at Disneyland, and I know why. I was on my 8th grade trip to Disneyland because I grew up down in San Diego. And so we went up to Disneyland for our 8th grade graduation trip, the whole class. And a stupid moron friend of mine, two cars ahead of me, threw an M80 into the coffin that we were going around a corner. And so with this huge bang in this enclosed space goes off, and I'm like, oh, great, genius McGee, two cars ahead of me. And so they stop the ride, and then this voice, this pre-piped-in voice comes over the line and goes, we're experiencing evil spirits on the ride. Please stay in your car, right? And they do that for a second. And then in true Disney magic, this guy comes around in a knight in armor costume, but it's clearly like a 15-year-old kid or 18-year-old kid. And so like from behind the mask, you just hear... Everybody okay in here? Okay, just come around checking. Everybody okay? All right, moving on to the next car. Everybody okay in here? Everybody okay? Just going around the next car. But I love that Disney had to put him in the suit of armor costume to go. Like, it's clearly an employee. They're like, quick, get Bob in the suit and have him walk around. And then they start the ride back up. It's so great, though. You can see the 18-year-old behind the mask. Everybody okay in here? Everything going all right in your car?
Dave, I thought you were going to say, in true Disney magic form, a knight actually came out and tased the kid.
Don't tase me, bro.
And he was ejected. Anyway, I don't know where why did that come up?
Because we were talking about manufacturing in China, and Brad, being the racist that he is, immediately thought of the It's a Small World. And and then he made some comment about getting stuck on the ride. I guess he's bigot against fat people too. And I don't know. I don't know what his deal is. All I know, I'm done with the guy.
You know what? Brad's just filled with hate.
I was gonna say, you guys remember the wicker thing from Emerald City where we challenged everybody to come up with a great
wicker joke,
capper, the punchline. You guys now have to write in your punchlines to, hey, I had a friend of mine get stuck on the It's a Small World ride for 2 hours. Well, what happened?
And then if you will pick a winner and then not send you a prize, just like the last contest.
Yeah, that's how it works.
It's kind of like Marvel Comics used to have the no prize.
Yeah,
you know?
The no prize.
Yeah. You win? You win an instant rapport, friendship, and relatability to the last person that won the contest and received nothing.
Right. No, what you win is if you see us at a con, we'll give you an additional, oh yeah. That guy.
As we lean over to one another and go, hey, here's the guy. And all right.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, all right, I guess that is, hey, good job.
Have you bought the book yet?
What's it going to take to get you a new link today? There you go.
So my my experience with buying a plush was, I was pretty straightforward, but I had the exact same problem that I would end up going weeks at a time without any contact with the manufacturer. And this guy is in Pennsylvania. I mean, and he's the liaison, but I can't recommend them, unfortunately. I think it might be more prudent to actually try and get hold of somebody in China directly and just deal with them straight away.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like the logical thing to do. Anytime you're in a situation like that, you can cut out the middleman. You know, you can, especially now when you can communicate so easily worldwide.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I do my books in China, and I find I did 3 of my 5 books in China, and I find the direct communication is just the easiest, like you said, Brad. There's no trouble waking up in the morning, sending off an email, getting one back the next morning, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Right. There's no timeline that's so crushing that you can't wait 18 hours for your response.
Right.
Brad, would you do plush for your characters?
I wouldn't do plush, but I would be very, very tempted to do action figures, like the traditional superhero action figures for Evil Inc. If you go to my Facebook fan club for Evil Inc., a reader of mine who lives in the UK handmade a Captain Heroic action figure, and it looks really awesome. I mean, it really kind of lit the fire under me to do that sometime. But if I went down that road, it would definitely be more along the lines of an action figure, not so much a plush. I don't think any of my characters would translate to a plush too well.
Red, you have got to do, and you can have this ready for Baltimore. You've got to do a memo plush. So simple.
That I could do. See, Chris, the joke I was going with there was that we actually go to this Facebook page and it's just a repainted Boba Fett, and we're like, Brad, that's Boba Fett.
He took some liberty with the character design, but I really appreciate it.
I will say this, and I think it's such a crapshoot with plushes, and definitely the way the process works is you submit a design. You have to be very, very specific with your design. Don't assume they can figure out anything. Draw every angle. Leave detailed notes. They will make an assumption and assume wrong. Your prototype is usually free, especially if you're going to make plushes. Sometimes if you make a prototype and decide not to go with the company, they'll charge you $75 or something. But
I'm really surprised, because the guy who wrote in said that they charged him $400 for the prototype. Mm. That's a lot of money. Yeah.
Now, I did have to pay that for the resin figure, but there's a lot more going into that, I think, than a plush. And
I did that
And I was told ahead of time on that too, so always ask. But when it comes to those prototypes, they will make changes without extra charges, or they should at least. If they're going to charge you for that, you need to maybe consider a different company. But, you know, don't be afraid to tell them to make changes and get it looking right. And then, you know, one of the things you want to look for is the quality of the plush and the material, because the last thing you want is a plush that looks and feels like a really crappy, cheapo stuffed animal you might want in a carnival. No one's going to want that. You've seen them, Chris. I've seen some people make plushes, and they obviously went the cheap route, and it's just not a good toy.
It's an investment. It's a big investment.
It is Andy. A big investment, yeah. But I think that you and I got really lucky with ours, Chris.
I think so too. Yeah. So
plushes.
Yeah, both of yours came out pretty well, I think. I was very, very happy to see both of them. They were really nice. So I will offer, before we move on, I will offer my countervailing thought on this, and then I will we can go on to the next one. So only based on the fact that because I have pretty what we in the toy business used to call toyetic characters, and that's basically just a toy phrase in the biz, meaning that a character that could be translated into a toy pretty quickly. Like my lizard, my dog, my duck could all become toys pretty quickly. But I've chosen not to do it because I think I worked at Mattel for 8 years. And here's my basic warning to you, artist to artist, is that because 90 to 95% of the toys in the world that you know and touch are made in China. And because even the biggest toy manufacturers in the world, of which I speak of Mattel and Playmobil and Fisher-Price, when even those companies have huge problems with quality control in China, with not insubstantial stuff finding its way into their toys, I would warn you against selling toys, especially to children. You can sell adult-based and adult after items and all that sort of stuff. My own personal warning, and this is probably different than what the other guys would tell you, is to avoid it, because the possible litigation is business-ruining. And just it's nothing that you can control. I mean, even the liaison that you would work with in the U.S., I can guarantee you, hasn't been to China in 5 to 10 years, probably used to work for Hasbro or Mattel as an engineer in the mid to late 80s or 90s, and still has maintained his contact in China and knows about as much about what's going on in those plants as you do. And the fact is that Mattel even had 15 to 30 safety engineers in China when all those poisoning cases were happening last year. So
you're
just be
about like lead paint and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, paints, but don't kid yourself. Plushes, there's all sorts of stuff that the Chinese government has had to recall. There's not a material that you can imagine that should go into a toy that hasn't been found in a toy at some point in manufacturing in China. I mean, they're it's like, oh, asbestos, that's lovely, that's great for a toy, wonderful. Let's have a toy with asbestos. Somebody somewhere has found, and the problem is because there, it's like Chicago food quality in the 30s. There's just no government around to tell you what you can stuff into a sausage, you know, and so. The Chinese government is playing catch-up against thousands and thousands of toy manufacturers that are spread out all across this country producing stuff. And, I mean, as evidenced by the fact that they recalled 700 tons of baby formula this week from China, they can't keep up with it. So that's just my warning to you, and I don't want to be the poo-poo guy on the podcast, but just be careful.
No, and I always tell that to the people that buy the plushes from me, as I say, hey, you know, listen, that's not for kids, that's for adults. That's to put on your cubicle, you know. That's not for the kids.
Exactly.
Right, right. And that's why I think Scott's going down an off path going maquettes, because maquettes are clearly not for kids. They're for a tabletop display. They sit on a table. You know, because they have a base, you can't really play with them. So, I think that's actually a great route for toy-type items, if you want to go that route.
Yeah.
But if you have like a family or a kid-friendly strip that you want to create toys for kids, just really, really, really be careful. That's my only advice.
I always wondered what to do plushes, because it seemed like it would be tailor-made for your strip.
Yeah, well, you know, and another thing, Brad, is that with plushes, too, that if you have a sewn-on nose for a dog, say, that can also break off and become a small part. And so then you have all sorts of small part and choking warnings and hazards that you have to deal with.
Yeah.
And, there literally is. There's not. Granted, it's not as regulated as it should be, but there's all sorts of trouble right now in the toy industry because of this problem. So, just be careful.
Good.
So anyway,
good
that's thought. Enough. That's enough of me naysaying. I just wanted to put that out there.
No, it's important,
no,
Dave.
That
that's
important.
Super important, Dave. Isn't there something you're supposed to put on the tags too, or did you already say that and I miss it?
Oh, well, my only thought. This is from a legal perspective. Is that if you do the toys. On the tag, you want to mark that it's not for children. So you want to put something to the legal effect of for adult collectors only, ages 14 and up, something along those lines. 13, 14, 15 usually is a safety range, I think. I think it's 14, but ages 14 and up. So that'll mitigate somewhat, and selling it to adults, obviously. And that's that. All right,
very good. I'm looking at the clock here, guys. Looks like we've got time for one more question.
All right.
And I'm thinking we've got one, and we might want to kind of take it and with the idea that we'll take another pass at it, because it's a little bit of a broad question, so maybe we might have to do this too. This is from Jerry Tracy, who does a single-panel comic called The Saturday Bulletin. That's at SaturdayBulletin.com.
And now you're embellishing it. Now you know that I enjoy it, you're embellishing it.
And here's his question.
But you know what, Brad? You know what? Yeah. Embellish it all you want.
Yeah, next one, I wanted to be Harmony.
I think Yahoo's already doing that. In monetizing a site, you mentioned ads using, and he's talking about in our book, How to Make Web Comics. He says, in monetizing a site, you mentioned ads using Google and Project Wonderful. Do you feel this is the best first step when it comes to helping a webcomic generate revenue? Your book and podcasts suggest that swag and merchandise, while fun, comprise a lower percentage of annual income. So he's asking, are starting out with ads, is that a good first step for ad revenue? What do we think about that?
I think that it's certainly the easiest first step, and it doesn't require a lot of, you know, you could put ads on your site. You've only got two strips up.
Right.
You're not going to make any money with the ads, but you certainly will not be able to print a book or do a T-shirt at that point.
Well,
so,
and
I mean,
by sheer technicality, I would say it is the
best first step.
This is something we might want to throw into the category of making sure you don't put the cart before the horse. But that being said, assuming that you're not going to do that, now it's time to generate. You have some decent page views. You want to generate some revenue. I don't even know what the climate is anymore. Maybe Chris, you can give me a better idea of this. But it seemed like the first baby steps that people take are usually a donation drive or a tip. A virtual tip jar. Do people still do that?
I don't see it nearly as much as you used to.
Yeah, and I think the reason for that is because a lot of these, is it turnkey? Is that the right word?
Mm-hmm. These turnkey ads. Yeah.
These turnkey ad systems are pretty painless. Generates, you know, if nothing else, beer and pizza money, and. And really are pretty widely accepted amongst readers. You know, you might feel a little weird asking for tips or donations, but people are used to seeing banner ads. They're used to seeing text ads, and so they don't scoff at them. They don't have a negative connotation. And depending on your readership, how much traffic you get, it could actually bring in a decent chunk of money, depending on how well you stay on top of them, watch your click-throughs. If there are ad systems that have adjustable rates, you adjust accordingly to try to raise or drop the amount of ad inventory you're filling. So I think it's a pretty good first step, but I don't want to discourage people from also trying to sell ads or sponsorships on their own. Maybe this doesn't work as well as it did back in the day when I did it, but if you find like-minded companies with products, smaller companies, maybe mom-and-pop shops, especially all these mom-and-pop internet services that are online, you know, hit them up. Hit them up with a special ad rate. Hit them up with a first-time advertiser sponsorship rate. I don't think there's anything wrong with trying to establish your own advertising connections on your own. And I think that these turnkey ad systems are working so well right now that people might skip that step these days. Because, I mean, when I started out, they didn't have these. Google AdSense wasn't here. What are the other ones? AdsDAC, Tribal Fusion. There's a whole bunch of them now. Project Wonderful.
Guerrilla Nation.
Yeah. I mean, there's a ton of them now, and they weren't around when I started in 98, so we kind of pursued our own advertising relationships, and I would hate to see that be lost because I think people assume it's you have these kind of do-it-yourself, throw the code up and hope that it makes some money for you, and then you go from that to finding an ad person, you know.
Right. In fact, you know, I think to back up a bit, one of the reasons why we – recommended Project Wonderful and Google Ads in the book is, I think, not that it's going to be the one that like will pay for your Acura, because they certainly will not. You're going to make, like Scott said, beer and pizza money. But I think, one, because when you're just starting out and when you're at the size that you will be when you're just starting out, these are some of the few turnkey solutions that will accept you. You're not going to get into Tribal Fusion right off the bat, because I think they base it off of Alexa rankings. You may not get into Guerrilla or to IndieClick or to AdSDAC or any of those. So for one reason, if you're looking for turnkey solutions, they might be one of the few that'll take you. And then, just speaking from personal experience, there's a learning curve to understanding what the difference is between CPC, CPA, CPM, eCPM. And what's nice about Google is that, or doing Project Wonderful at Google, is that it just sort of helps you down that path of learning the terminology, what it means, how to best implement it. Like Scott said, you sort of tinker with it as you go.
Project Wonderful is kind of a really nice stepping stone between turnkey and selling ads on your own, too, because you can tweak it. You can usually the people on Project Wonderful are other webcomics or like-minded individuals. There are still a couple people like T-shirt people and stuff like that. But they're more of that same kind of community. You know, these are also online entrepreneurs with their own websites. And there's an internal email system where you can talk to advertisers. I really like it. I've really been enjoying Project Wonderful. I mean, it's been bringing in a decent chunk of revenue for me, and I really like the way the system works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One thing that I've just started using AdStack, I think around the first of the year, and I just added Tribal Fusion. And one thing that I like about those, and you could start at using either one of those two when you're ready, and that is that it lets you kind of set up a chain. So, for example, AdStack might be using 25% of my total page views that I'm able to offer in a day. And for that other 75, I can set up a whole percentage system of saying, okay, of that 75%, I want 25% to go to Tribal Fusion, I want 50% to go to Project Wonderful, and I want 25% to go to house ads that I design and link to certain places on my site. So you can set up this whole chain that you're always doing something with those extra page views that the first provider isn't using. So it's really kind of neat, and it lets you set up your own ad server too, because then when you do sell a sponsorship like I did a couple months ago, I was able to go right into AdStack and clear out exactly the number of page views that I needed to satisfy my contract and just let it run. So it's almost like by signing up with some of these turnkey systems, you get access to your own ad server system. You know what I'm saying?
No, I've been a big fan of that with AdStack. In fact, I've liked AdStack in general, even though, and you guys' experience may be different, but I've found the payout to be very inconsistent, probably related to what big ad buys they're getting that month.
Yeah.
But I like overall AdStack's interface and system, and I do like you said, Brad, I like how you can chain it together with either Tribal Fusion or you know, Google Ads or anything else you've got in backup for code. It's a handy little system. But you know, it's funny because advertising, I don't know how you guys feel about this, but I feel like it's something that you're sort of unless you're doing something like Scott's doing where you're direct selling and you have more control over it, it's sort of a constant experimentation about what's working now on the web, and it kind of changes every 6 months, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah, you kind of...
You really have to keep up with. I mean, AdStack just had a really good month last month, and now it's dead again, and I'm going to have to switch out all my ads so that I bump that down.
Yep, I had the exact same experience, Chris.
Google's the same way for me, too.
Yeah, I'm almost giving up on Google because you can have such big payouts and then nothing for literally months at a time. And the thing is, if you're smart about it and you're really watching it, there's probably a cartoonist out there that's like a hawk and just watching his percentages every day or her percentages and changing out and swapping out ads anytime something's dropping. But you know, for me, I want something that's a little bit like install it and forget it, as I'm sure a lot of people do. And that probably ends up losing me 10 or 20% of what I could be making. But for me, it's worth not having to pay attention to it, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a guy watching the stock market constantly. I'm not that guy. I don't want to be that guy.
Day trading.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I'm up a penny on you know, eHarmony. I'm selling that. You know, I don't know. Is eHarmony even a publicly traded stock? I don't even
Well,
know.
With 29 different dimensions of compatibility, I'm sure you're
Our first joke in 10 minutes. Good job, Chris. Oh man, but yeah, I mean, I got so frustrated with Project Wonderful paying me. I think it's literally like because I refuse a lot of stuff because I'm all ages and family friendly, so I say no, and that kind of kills the Project Wonderful model for me. So I only ended up making on average months like $100 from Project Wonderful. So I said shine that, and this month I'm trying out Tribal Fusion, Direct Media Exchange or Write Media Exchange, depending on how you want to call it. I applied to Guerrilla Nation, but we'll see if that works out. And I'm thinking, although Scott is telling me not to try it, Linkshare.
Well, the reason for that is, I'm going to tell you to avoid Guerrilla Nation too, but that's probably a different story. Yeah, I didn't like Guerrilla Nation. The thing with Guerrilla Nation is that their turnkey stuff wasn't very effective. Their targeted ads where they work with you are where the real money is, where their decent rates are. And the minute they get a decent campaign, at least with me, they hit you up to go exclusive with them. And when you don't, you just you know, you're wasting your ad page views with them because I think other things pay better, unless they've changed. The text link ads I want to talk to you about because it's very important. And I don't really understand it 100%, but there's this thing called Google PageRank. Don't ask me why it's important. I just know that it is. But so this is my understanding of it. Google assigns page ranks to pages. Jump in if you know more about this than I do. But my page rank used to be a 7, which I think 9 is the highest. So for a website of my size, that's about as good as a site's going to get. Penny Arcade's at a 7. Text link ads and SOE SEO optimization, search engine optimization, is all about optimizing your page so that Google spiders will come out and spider your page, spider all the links to it, and based on how many people are linking to you, it determines how popular your page is, and then it ranks it. And a lot of advertisers will only advertise on websites with a Google page rank of a certain number or higher. Okay, so the higher your page rank, the more appealing you are to certain advertisers, certainly probably Google AdSense advertisers. A lot of these text link services, the people advertising on them don't care about the product they're advertising. They don't care about selling products. They don't care about click-throughs or anything, CPMs. All they care about is getting what's called link juice from your website. They care about Google coming to your page, finding a link to their page, and getting listed in by Google spiders as getting a lot of links from your page, right? So it falsely inflates their perceived popularity. So you might find that there's a text link on your site for Nintendo Wii games, and the site goes to an automotive car dealership. And it's because they don't care about getting people who want to buy cars. They just want people that like my site to click on the link so that their Google spiders think that their page is popular. Now, sounds like a great way to sell ads, right? Especially if you're a popular site. The problem is that decreases your page rank.
Yeah.
Because it gives what's known as what's giving away your link juice. So I don't know if you've heard of search engine optimization, but it's all about adjusting how your links work so that Google spiders come to your page and stop there. And most of your links just end on your page. So you want more links coming in than going out. You want your site to be a destination as more of a connector, and that increases your rank and it makes you more appealing. So that's my understanding of it. Okay, what I don't get is how it matters. Because if advertisers will only advertise on your site if you have a high Google rank, but linking to other sites lowers your rank, then if you link to other sites and have an effective ad, that will lower your rank, and then advertisers won't want you. So what's the point of it? I don't understand it. But that's why I wash my hands of them. The text links were actually paying pretty good, Dave.
I really appreciate that whole description, because that's something we haven't talked about before, was Google PageRank, and I remember you explaining that to me before. But I was actually going to do link share for skyscraper ads way down on my blog, but it made the same thing. Like you said, it may still be stealing link juice, which I don't think is the funniest phrase
I know
in the web. But It's you know what? It's polyjuice potion. It's like, oh, but my link juice. But what was I going to say? You know what? It's funny. I was online. I can't find a thing to give me my Google PageRank. Where do you guys know of a good thing? I used to know of one online.
The only way I know to do it,
but
other than
these malwares that are trying to get,
yeah, don't do that. The only way I know to do without getting yourself in trouble is to install the Google toolbar on into Firefox,
good.
And then you can go to a web page and it tells you the rank.
Don't want it.
There's a way to look. I just don't know how to get to it. But
there's some third party site or you see.
No, there's a Google site that lets you do it. I just can't think of what it was.
Oh, here, let me look it up then. I'll just type in the PageRank. Anyway, I was just sort of curious to see what all of our page ranks were. I think all of us are at sixes, and I Scott was at a seven.
Wait, is it better? It's better the lower it is, right?
No, higher's better.
Higher, higher. That's
I think nine is the highest.
You know what? Somebody else pointed out, a reader pointed out to me, by the way. Do you know the only one among us that has a Wikipedia page devoted to himself?
No.
I bet you can't guess.
Wait a minute. Has a Wikipedia page devoted to himself or to his strip?
Oh, it's
no,
me.
No, not to his strip, but to him. Can anybody?
It's me.
That's right.
Why do you have a wiki page devoted to you, the person?
Well, I didn't write it.
Oh, no, wait. No. Hold on. I think it was Chad, man. I'm forgetting. Hold on. I got to look it back up again. I think it was Chad. Hold on. I looked it up when they emailed about it. I thought it was you.
Look, I am more important than the work I do. That's pretty obvious. Scott, you get bounced to
nope,
the
here it is. Brad Geiger. Brad Geiger's own age. That's who it was. I knew. I forgot already who it was. Brad.
Oh, Brad, we are setting the world on fire.
Yeah, there's just two Chris. Of us.
Yeah, what's wrong with you guys?
No, does Chris have one? Oh, he does have one. Christopher Straw. What's wrong with us, Scott? Apparently we smell.
I have a pretty hefty PvP page at Wikipedia, but
you do. You have a gigantic page.
I fear what any wiki page about just me would say, so I'm glad I don't have one.
The PvP Scott. Page is actually has more words than the page on the American Revolution. So congratulations on that.
Probably. Stop it.
Oh, stop.
I still that's how you know the important, and I say this jokingly when I said, like, Scott, why don't we have a, because I really don't care. But this is what I think is funny, is I joked one time about that, Chris, and I did a word count, just copying and putting into Microsoft Word, and the Opti Prime listing was something like twice as long as the Dwatton listing.
God.
Which I thought was hilarious. I cannot find Google Page. Oh, man, everybody wants a malware to close. Oh well.
That'll have to wait.
I constantly feel like I'm undervaluing, or not undervaluing, under, what's a good way to say it, monetizing Sheldon for advertising, but I'm just sort of, I'll admit it, I kind of half the time don't know what I'm doing with advertising.
And, we've talked about this kind of thing before where it's like, you know, you've got a balance of being a cartoonist and a businessman, and where is the balance? How much time do you devote to the business side? You
right.
know.
Well, this is one of those things where I've just kind of admitted that rather than have to learn it, I'd rather just make less money, I think. Chris. It's a balance. But no, I mean, like, Brad, you would admit, Brad, that you can't be good at everything, and I've just admitted that I can't be good.
I agree with you 100%. It was funny to hear you say it that way, but that it actually makes perfect logical sense. There's some things you've got to give up in order to create more time to do other things. And in the long run, you're probably going to do better than if you were to try to do everything at 100%.
Yeah, I think if you keep in mind always in your career that your first and foremost job is to be a better cartoonist, then eventually some kind reader, I found this to be true, and you guys probably have found this to be true, eventually some kind reader will email you and be like, hey, you've got your advertising all set up wonky. What you should do is, and you're like, oh, thank you. That would have taken me 6 months to learn that.
Exactly.
And so if you give out the gift of your strip, and this kind of goes back to what we said in the book, eventually somebody nice or even a fellow cartoonist will point out to you what you're doing wrong. So that's sort of my advertising attitude. And only this year, really, and I'm now, what, 9 years in, 10 years in, do I kind of start caring about advertising. So we'll see. Why? What, Brad? What?
Well, I think it's time we bring this one into a landing.
Yeah, because I feel like crap, and I'm pissed you guys made me do it. But I love Indicia. God, Indicia. It's like Benadryl. And
just let it soothe you.
It does soothe me with effervescent ease of mailing out packages.
Scott, you need to take that to the halls of Indicia.
Now, how long that special promotion that they're having where you can get all that stuff for a really good price and get, like, what is it, 7 months or so free, how long is that going to be available, do we know?
You know, Brad, I honestly don't know, but they didn't mention that and I didn't ask, so I would assume that it's going to end at some point, because I can't imagine they'll keep that up forever, but I don't know when, quite honestly.
So it's probably a good idea to go over to indicia.com/webcomics, check it out, especially since this is our last podcast featuring the sponsorship. And if you're going to do it, this is the time to do it.
Yeah, Brad, I would be interested in finding out as you go along how much more enjoyable your life has become.
Well, I am looking forward to it. I have to admit, it's so far the first exposure to it has been very good.
Well, good. I'm glad you found that to be the case, Brad. Because I honestly think, especially as your shipping volume gets larger and larger and larger as the years go on, that kind of thing is going to save you so many headaches. So that's good.
Yeah.
And you know what? The one last thing that I was going to mention about Aditya that we didn't mention last week or whatever it was. And I don't know if you guys have found this to be the case, but I find it very satisfactory. Do you guys know you can hide the amount of postage when you print it out on Indicia?
Oh, yeah. That's I was reading that in the little pamphlet, yeah.
And I say that not as someone, and you, because I think you guys know this, I try to charge exactly what it costs me to ship. But I have found that, like, let's say if the postage itself costs 50 cents, well, or let's say $1.50, but you also want to charge what it costs you to buy the envelope from Uline, which is usually somewhere between 30 and 60 cents. And then you also want to charge for the Dymo printing label, which is usually around 11 cents a unit. So you want to add on an extra 60 cents. And I have got, back in the day, a few emails from people that would be like, hey, I know for a fact Priority Mail only costs blibbity blur, you know, whatever the package. Why are you charging me more? And so being able to hide that on Indicia, which is kind of a neat feature because it's coded in, it doesn't show as a number. You don't get people emailing you being like, what do you mean it's an extra dollar? Because you want to charge what it costs you to ship, but you don't want to have to feel the grief over that, you know?
Yeah.
I saw that hidden postage option, and I didn't know why I'd want to ever use it, but that makes perfect sense.
Because there is some packaging, Brad, that as you get into weird permutations of packaging, that you'll be like, well, geez, this package like a mailing tube, for example. If you're mailing out a poster, sometimes those tubes can be between 50 and a dollar, depending on how big the poster is.
Right.
And, you know, you can't accept the cost on that if you're mailing out 500 of those. That's a hit of $500, so you have to charge for it. But if people see that on their postage, that it was charged as an extra dollar, even though the postage was a dollar less, they start to get suspicious. And so that hidden postage thing just eases the way for what is otherwise an honest dealing, but it doesn't give people the chance to be uppity about it, you know?
Right.
So that's a nice little feature. Anyway,
I love it because it hides from my readers that I am completely raping them on postage.
But I have an additional, it's called the fun tax is what I call it.
Oh, and, that's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah, and it's like another $4 or $5 on top of the, you know, I just send in media mail. It'll get there. It's fine. Don't worry.
You know what's funny, Chris? Looking at your Wikipedia page, it does mention the fun tax. So that's
what do we call that? Other companies call it shipping and handling because the handling is I call it the take it easy there, fun guy. It'll arrive when it arrives. We ain't Amazon.com.
I'm just one man, tax.
It's just me, pal.
I'm just a dude. All right. I don't have a segue getting me through my warehouse here.
I do have it on my page listed as shipping and handling because I'm, you know, there may be a variance of 30 to 60 cents on each one of them that I don't, yeah. I've had a comment or two before.
I like how I described it for like 9 minutes when all I needed to say was shipping and handling. Here I'm like, well, you know, there's all these other costs. Like, and like 10 minutes later, you guys let me go through that whole diatribe, but then you eventually go, oh, you mean like shipping and handling.
You know what I love? You've actually taken the time to figure out what one Dymo label costs. And down to 11 cents. And I'm not being sarcastic. I love that.
Can I tell you, you know what? And you might call me a doofus for doing this, but I freaking watch my business like a hawk when it comes to costs. If you control your costs, you have a winning business, and I'm not kidding you about that.
I am not being sarcastic in the slightest. I just love the fact that you did that so I didn't have to.
Well, it is 11 cents a unit. If you buy from PC Connection, if you buy elsewhere, it's 15 cents a unit. All right, so that's Webcomics Weekly. I've been a dork that's watching pennies at the end of the podcast.
Yeah, I want to say one more thing related to DC and shipping and stuff. Okay, I buy, and maybe this will lead into our next sponsorship. I think we should get Uline to sponsor us because we use them as much.
I think so too.
But the best thing about Uline, and you can use this with your in conjunction with your Indicia, is after the first time you order packaging supplies from Uline, they will send you one phone book catalog every 12 hours in the mail.
Yes.
And
yes, they do.
You can use that as packing material. Just rip those pages out, put them through a shredder, and...
That's like hamster bedding.
It's awesome.
You can upholster a couch with that. There's all kinds of stuff you can do.
If you have an 1860s outhouse, toilet paper, you can use it for that. But you know what's funny about that, Scott? They do mail, and every time we get one, my wife is like, geez, hello to Northern Forest. Where are you going? Because it's like these dang catalogs are like 400 pages, and it's like, we made a change to page 42. Here's your new catalog. And you're like, ugh, really?
It is unreal how many catalogs they send out. I mean, they are literally choking my office, those Uline catalogs. And, God, I hate them so much. I hate them so much. I love Uline. I love their products, but I do not understand the catalog. I've never once ordered anything from the catalog. I've always ordered it from online.
It's all online.
Yeah, I just don't get it. Do you think maybe... they're just taking unsold stock and pulping it and turning that into the catalog? Surely not. I mean, that would be wonderful if they did. But
did you guys ever see the movie? It was a documentary, Who Killed the Electric Car?
No, was it any good?
It was good, actually. But the answer to that, Uline catalogs. That's who killed the electric car.
Oh.
That was a long walk for that joke. I apologize. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, let's wrap it up for the night, shall
please.
We? Please. Yeah. All right. So once again, and we thank our month-long sponsor, Indicia, at last time with the special offer, Indicia.com/webcomics. We thank them for sponsoring the podcast all month long. And let's shout it out. I've been Dave Kellett at Sheldon Comics over here in L.A. It's 10:20 p.m. PST. Who else is here? Who else
Ooh.
Is among us?
I'm Chris Straub. I do starslip.com, chainsawsuit.com, fchords.com, and it's 12:30 in the a.m. here in Dallas.
I'm Brad Dyer. I do evil-comic.com, fables.com, and recordinghappendisaster.com, and it is 1:23 in the morning.
Oh, my God. Oh, Brad, I'm so sorry.
You picked this recording time, smart guy.
I'm not complaining. I go.
And last but not least, Captain Sniffles, you want to sign off before we head out?
Yeah, I'm Scott Kurtz, and I do PvPonline.com. And Destiny, Fate, Nature, God, whatever you believe in, has been kicking me square in the nuts all weekend. I'm in a bad mood. I don't like webcomics. I don't like you listeners. Don't like my co-host, especially. This microphone's pissing me off. And but I love Indicia. God bless them. TVPonline.com.
One last thing. September 27th, 28th, Baltimore Comic Con. All four of us will be there. All right,
Baltimore.
I'll be Comic-Con. Better by then.
You better be.
Yeah, because you're all smiles tonight. Fun to do a podcast with.
All right, guys.
I'm sorry, Captain Sniffles. All right, I hope
it's all right.
I'll be getting a tersely worded email after this.
All right, guys. I'll see you tomorrow.
All right. Have a good night.
Later.
Bye-bye.